Have you seen the movie Lucy by Scarlett Johansson? Okay, that's it. That's the history of USB. Thank you for listening and see you again next week.
Listening to Apple Podcasts, number one tech news podcast in the Philippines. Here's your host, Jack of Jack Talk Stack.
What's up, everyone? My name is Jack, and welcome to yet another episode of Jack Talks Tech. Whether you're listening to the podcast via Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your favorite podcast, thank you. I appreciate it very much. We are still recording live from the studio. Apartment here in Lucena City. Are you fed up with dealing with all manner of different connections? Serial, parallel, chargers, data connections? Well, fear no more because USB is here. You'll never have to worry about having boxes of cables ever again. Oh, apart from the fact that since it was announced, USB connection seems to change every single year. Okay, so that's an exaggeration. But since mini connectors were introduced with USB 2.0, we've been through numerous revisions, along with all manners of different types. It seems like the dream of having a single cable suitable for all, even 20 years later, still hasn't, you know, quite become the reality. But why? And how? And why again? Well, let's begin with the introduction of USB. USB 1.0, introduced in January 1996 with a maximum data transfer rate of 12 megabits per second. The idea, pushed by a consortium of 7 companies, was to make it easier to connect peripherals to your PC. This is where it started, with representatives from these companies creating a USB Implementers Forum, or USBIF, a non-profit organization set up to devise, promote, support, and enforce compliance with this new USB architecture. Initially, funding was provided by the companies involved, but ongoing, the USB Implementers Forum would source funding from licensing. $5,000 for an annual USBIF membership will grant you a vendor ID, allowing you to seek a certificate of compliance. Or $3,500 will grant you a license to use the USB logo for a 2-year term. Of course, the initial company support was very crucial as it would take a while for USB to propagate into the world of PCs. Most people didn't get a sniff of it until USB 1.1 emerged in 1998, which was handy as version 1.0 had a very few issues relating to timing and power supply. 1.1 is the point that Microsoft coined the term legacy-free PC. Although at this stage, you didn't expect USB-A ports to appear in new PCs, maybe a couple of years back, alongside your standard ports. Any peripherals shunning the slow serial or parallel ports of old and making use of this spanking technology would either be hard-wired up or have USB-B connector on their ends. Now you might ask, what was the point in having both a Type-A and Type-B connector? It's a good question, a valid one. The Type-B connector is electrically identical. It has the same pins, but the size is different intentionally to prevent users from connecting a host to another host, resulting in a short circuit. At this stage, USB ports didn't tend to have a graceful handling of power errors. So, two connections trying to send 0.5 volts down the same line, it wasn't a good situation. And this is the whole new premise behind the A and B designation. A is for the host, B is for the slave device. And not only that, for those of us who have problems identifying the correct way to plug a USB in, let's admit it, most of us do. Just remember, if you can see the USB logo on top of the plug, you're plugging it in the right way. That just solved a 20-year worth of plugging issues in one go, unless your USB socket are mounted sideways, and then I'm afraid no one can help you. However, lumping a massive USB-B connection on a digital camera wasn't very graceful. It just looked a bit excessive. There was no provision for a smaller connector on the slave end, as the USB specification assumed a tethered or hardwired connection. So, some companies actually broke the rules a little and implemented a standard A connector on their peripheral, or just implemented their own bespoke connectors. It would be the USB 2.0 revision, published in May 2000, which first offered a mini B connector. In the USBIF's own words, the USB 2.0 specified device side connector, the B connector, is too large for use with a new generation of handheld and mobile devices, samples like cell phones, which would benefit from connectivity to a PC. So, through improved hardware, USB 2.0 had brought with it the potential for a whopping 480 megabit per second transfer rate, with a cable consisting of two power conductors and two signal conductors, same as 1.1. And this speed could be pushed through a mini connector, completely opening up the world of peripherals in terms of both size and operation. But the world was changing rapidly. The situation of having a distinct host and slave device was becoming a bottleneck. In the past, this arrangement had worked wonderfully. It meant that the slave device, such as a mouse, a DJ deck, or even PDA, you know, PDA, personal data assistance, for those who are still young enough not to know, that's a personal computer on your palm. It had to possess very little logic in this regard, as the host would supply the power and handle all the communication over the bus. This leaves slave peripherals needing only to poll when they require the host to do something. This is fine for most setups, but what if you want your printer to be able to take on the role of the host and read data to and from the USB stick? Or you want your PDA to act as the host for your mobile phone? Well, then we need a different solution. This is where the USB On-The-Go or USB ODG makes an entrance. First appearing in late 2001, in a supplement to the USB 2 specification, the Mini AB receptacle was introduced, and with it, the Mini A plug. It's now providing us with a Mini Host plug and a Mini Slave plug. Now, the Mini AB receptacle can accept either the Mini A or Mini B connection, but due to the way these plugs were presented and the pins are aligned, the device can detect which one it is, allowing the peripheral to swap roles to enable the peripheral to identify whether it's acting as a host or slave. The AB receptacle has an extra ID pin in addition to the four standard contacts. If a Mini A is plugged in, the additional ID pin in the Mini A cable receptacle connects with the GND pin of the plug. If a Mini B is plugged in, it is self-unconnected, and a pull-up resistor is used to detect the absence of the connection. Thus, the peripheral can initially act as a master or slave without, you know, causing issues or power issues or invalidating the A and B assignment of the previous cables. Pretty clever. Reportedly, there are also few rare handheld devices which had solely Mini A receptacles, allowing them to act as a standard host arrangement, but I'll be damned if I find any. Now we've got mini connectors, standard connectors, we've also got on-the-go compatibility. Why would anything ever change that from this point forward? Enter micro USB. Announced by the USBIF on 4th January 2007, here we have a plug which is almost exactly the same width as mini USB, but half the thickness. And the reason? Well, the USB 2.0 specification revision 1.01 of April 4, 2007 states, USB has become a popular interface for exchanging data between cell phone and portable devices. Many of these devices have become so small it is impossible to use a standard USB component as defined in the USB 2.0 specification. In addition, the durability requirements of the cell phone and portable devices market exceed the specifications of the current interconnects, since cell phones and other small portable devices are the large market in, you know, the potential USB. This specification is addressing this at a very large market while meeting all the requirements for electrical performances within the USB 2.0 specification. The scope goes on to clarify, cell phone and portable devices have become so thin that the current mini USB does not fit well within the constraints of future designs. Additional requirements for a more rugged connector that will have a durability past 10,000 cycles and still meet the USB 2.0 specification for mechanical and electrical performance was also a consideration. The mini USB could not be modified and remain backward compatible to the existing connector as defined in the USB OTG specification. So that's the reason, or reasons. Mobile phones were becoming too thin to support mini USB and the connector wasn't just rugged enough. The mini connector was rated at 5,000 insertions, whilst micro is rated at least 10,000. This includes the fact that mini USB put the mechanical strain on the socket rather than on the cable. Here's the weak point. The sticky out bump, which could pull and tug and become distorted. This often led to disconnect sockets and damage to peripherals rather than a cheap, easy-to-replace cable. You can see this on micro USB plug. It now has springy metal catches, which hold the plug firmly without putting too much strain on the receptacle. Well, that sounds all reasonable. But dig a little deeper, and we actually find that, as with many things in this world, the decision to move to micro USB wasn't solely the decision of the USBIF. It was perhaps pushed by one of the big guns at the time, Nokia. In June of 2007, Apple's iPhone was set to storm the mobile phone market. Up until that point, companies like Nokia, Sony, BlackBerry, even Panasonic were still heavyweights in the market. But clearly, having already been announced in January of the same year, Apple's new entry had these companies pretty concerned. They knew that they had to step up their game, and no one knew this more than Nokia. Even at this point, Nokia are still relying on their standard barrel plug chargers for a lot of their range. Phones like the 5700 Express Music had a mini USB, but they were still pretty chunky slabs, unlike Apple's offering. Nokia needed to change their tactics. Their premium phone, the 8600 Luna, was one of their first models to adopt micro USB, paired with a stainless steel body, 2-megapixel camera, and digital music player. It was probably the best they could muster to fight off the iPhone. They had models like the N95, but that was so chunky slab. It was announced in 2006 and really aimed to a different market. It seemed that Nokia may have been at the forefront of pushing to reduce the connector size, giving them more space both inside and outside of the phone. At a time when freedom to innovate was crucial, and so micro USB would become the new standard. And with it, a new on-the-go standard or OTG standard, the micro AB. With this, we get three additional ID pin states, offering the ability for devices to be connected for both a charger and other devices simultaneously. It allows Nokia and other manufacturers to expand their OTG plans. Given the standards for mini USB were already defined, it was impossible to implement this in existing designs and the backwards compatibility. Therefore, we have a new connectors, the micro B and of course the micro A, for following the same OTG premise as the mini connectors. And although we had to adapt to these changes, it wasn't easy enough. New phones and devices, apart from Apple, of course, would move to micropores, and then suddenly, we had a different set of wires to chuck in our box. But this was going to be going forward. In fact, in 2009, the EU's industry commissioner, Gunther Verwegen, I'm pretty much sure I botched that pronunciation, he called for iPhone chargers to be standardized, to be micro USB formats. And in June 2009, 10 manufacturers, of course, including Nokia, but also Samsung and even Apple, signed a memorandum of understanding committing to provide chargers compatible within 2 years. But it never really fully happened, with Apple simply offering an adapter to accommodate the standard. Of course, no one bought the adapter and Apple continues to use their own connector. But it seems it would have really worked out anyway, because the USB 3.0 specification had already been published in November 2008. And by 2010, the first compliant motherboards were announced. And with them, transmission rates of a whopping 5 gigabits per second. Of course, USB 2.0 micro connections couldn't handle this bitrate, and so another two plugs entered the fray. Well, three if you count the blue Type A sockets. These are backwards compatible with 2 and 1.1, but actually introduce a new set of pins specifically for USB 3 traffic. That caused a new set of problems with people trying to use their older USB cables for high-speed purposes, which still persist to this day. For larger peripherals, we get a completely different connector. By tagging some extra pins on the top, those peripherals can now accept super speed connections. We also get a super speed micro B, which adds an additional 5 pins beside the standard micro connector. Again, allowing for super speed connections while retaining backwards compatibility. I can still plug a micro B plug to a connector just fine. But even at this point, you don't need a USB IF to point out that this is a sloppy fix. It's not ideal to have these connector variants, and it would be much nicer if we had a single connector type that was on the go, compliant, out of the box, and could handle super speed connections. What we really need is USB-C. Developed concurrently to the USB 3.1 specification, version 1.0 was published in August 2014. USB IF said, "With the continued success of the USB interface, there exists a need to adapt USB technology to serve newer computing platforms and devices as they were trending towards smaller, thinner, and lighter form factors. Many of these newer platforms and devices are reaching a point where existing USB receptacles and plugs are inhibiting innovation, especially given the relativity in large size and internal volume constraints of a standard A and standard B versions of USB connectors. Additionally, as platform usage models have evolved, usability and robustness requirements have advanced, and existing set of USB connectors were not originally designed for some of the newer requirements. So, rather than just offering a new small connector, the purpose of USB-C is to make this single connector the standard for all devices, big or small, host or slave, thereby removing the existing layers of confusions. It can also be inserted upwards or downwards, using those hosts at the same time. Arguably, it's what the original USB connector should have been from the go. But as technology evolves and changes our lives, so much its appearance, specifications, and standards, USB-C carries all the learning from over 20 years of USB experience, and it's only going through those processes that we can sometimes end up with the same simplicity as we can begin. I guess at least we should be grateful that USB-C is intended to be with us for the foreseeable future. Through the subsequent revisions of USB 3.1 with Generation 2 capable of 10 gigabits per second, and the recent 3.2, which increases speed without requiring any connector changes, thanks to improved encoding and multi-channel operation through existing wires. Nowadays, we have devices that has USB 4, but I'm not gonna discuss it anymore because it looks exactly the same as USB-C.
Alright, with that said, there's really nothing else left to do. Hit that like button if you like this type of content. Smash it if that's your something into 2021 style. Give us a follow. Subscribe if you aren't already. And I'll see you in the next one. Assuming that we all survive. Let's make the needy techie.
Peace!